So some people might think of art and think, oh, it's just something easy on the eye, pretty to look at, but created by professional art and created by professional artists to feature in nice, fancy places, hotels, you know, all of the like. However, art can have a powerful meaning that goes beyond the pretty. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Beverly Natus, a professor in interdisciplinary studies at University of Washington, Tacoma, wants to make art accessible to everyone. And she doesn't stop just there. She encourages the art to spur and encourage social change. So today we have Professor Beverly Natus with us in the studio, along with two of her former students. First of all, welcome Beverly to the studio.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And also in the studio with us, again, her former students, Rachel Irvin and Jen Sokowski. Rachel is a writer and just graduated from the University of Washington, Tacoma in interdisciplinary arts and sciences with an emphasis in arts, media, and culture. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thanks.
And also Jen here. Jen is a current student at the University of Washington, Tacoma with a double emphasis, one in ethnic, gender, and labor, and the other in arts, media, and culture with an emphasis on visual arts. You are a busy woman. Yeah. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome, Jen. Well, Beverly, I want to start with you. What is art for social change?
It's a very big topic because the spectrum is huge. It could be that somebody is experiencing what I often refer to as cognitive dissonance, like they just don't understand why things are so out of whack. And so they begin to make art to try and understand why things don't make sense. Another reason is that people need to heal from trauma. And so they begin to make art in order to be part of that healing process. On the other end of the spectrum, you have people who really want to provoke others because they feel people are numb and in denial, and so they will want to do work to really shift consciousness in a big way. Some people who are doing what is now called socially engaged art are just telling their story and trying to find community, trying to find a way not to be so isolated within their own story. And that's how I start when I work with my students, because it's the way I started when I was a baby artist. So.
When you were a baby artist.
Right.
Oh, well, I like that. Well, how might you distinguish art, let's say, that you would see at the Seattle Art Museum or at New York's Museum of Modern Art from art for social change? Or is there a distinguishing, you know,
well,
factor
you'll,
there?
You'll find socially engaged work in any museum. It's usually not a large part of the museum's collection because much of the work is about beauty. And the notion that beauty and truth could be married together in a very compelling way has been in favor in the ruling class periodically. Like, we have a moment when it's in fashion right now in certain parts of the country. But often there's a reaction against it and it's hidden, and the work will explode outside of museums. So there's a great deal of socially engaged work happening, particularly collaboratively in collectives all over the world right now. But many people don't know about it in museums because it actually doesn't care about museums. It wants to be seen in public. It wants to be part of the healing of the planet right now.
Well, how did you find out about it? How did you get started with art for social change?
I come from a family that was very oriented towards social justice. They were involved in peace movements, civil rights movements. In college, I got involved with the beginnings of the feminist art movement. And so it was just natural for me to try and figure out how can my stories help me find community and help change things into a better place. I mean, right now we need it urgently. And so I have a sense that as a teacher, I'm able to increase the numbers of people who are engaged in this work and make it a safe and provocative and exciting path for my students to take. I'm not necessarily training students to become professional artists, but I'm training them to be grounded and creative citizens, and that they will know that they can always use art to be part of a journey that is about healing and it's about transformation as well.
Give me an example of a piece of your work that where people have had a strong reaction, you know, kind of going back to your comment about the beauty and, you know, people not really wanting to see that beauty and honesty can live together in art, right? So talk a little bit about your own work and maybe something that someone people have had a strong reaction to.
Yeah. Early on in the late 70s, I started having a lot of nightmares about nuclear war. And they were very profound. And I thought I was probably going crazy with these nightmares. And because nobody was talking about it. And we had nuclear weapons all over the place. And I thought, what, am I alone? So I decided to make an installation piece about it. And it looked like the last survivor's dwelling. And there was sound in it. I'd been working with Laurie Anderson as a visiting artist at my graduate school. And so there were voices of despair and cynicism within the audio loop that was part of the work. And people, after experiencing the piece, would come up and tell me their own nightmares, their own experiences during the Cuban Missile Crisis that they'd never shared with anyone because they didn't want to freak anyone out. And the piece kept being invited to be in exhibitions. And I began to find messages that people would leave in the piece for me about how they were so grateful for somebody talking about this thing, which they'd been carrying inside themselves. I started to do work with Joanna Macy, who does despair and empowerment work, and made my work more audience, explicitly audience participatory. And over the years, I've created lots of installations where people are invited to share their own story. And I find that if the work is really visually compelling, and people feel like if I say something that I'm really feeling vulnerable about, like maybe I'm the only one or I'm really uncomfortable with this, that people find some resonance with it. They feel like they can go to the work and they write things down. Recently, I did a piece at the Folklife Festival the year before last. It was a giant game board. And people were invited to play the game about the perils and rewards of being an activist in this time. And I found that people loved playing this game. I was amazed by it, that they wanted to share their stories about the frustrations of being an activist, what it was like being part of the Occupy movement, or in some cases, being a member of the Tea Party. So people from very different points of view were actually having conversations in this installation. And partly it was because the installation was beautiful. People wanted to be inside it. So, and I also have a project on Vashon Island, which is a large eco-art project that remediates soil through permaculture design and feeds the people who come to visit. And that piece has an archive in the center, which I call a story hive. And people can leave their own stories about what inspires them to plant seeds in a time of ecological crisis. And the farmers and gardeners on the island have contributed stories to this hive, and seeds are exchanged there, and it's thriving, and I do rituals there every solstice, so we just had one yesterday.
Oh, very nice. Well, you mentioned your work at Northwest Folklife, and I know, Jen, you also had work, it's you and Rachel, right? Mm-hmm. Both of you guys had work at Northwest Folklife. So, Jen, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about your work that was displayed there, and I guess kind of picking up on Professor Beverly Natus here said, talking about, you know, when you think about art for social change, does it resonate with you that messaging of I'm not alone? Is that part of where you come from, or talk about your own experience?
I think actually for me, I think that through Beverly, I've started feeling like I'm not alone, because actually we had a lot of discussion. And we would discuss like our fears and our viewpoints and the things that we were reading about, and we were discussing kind of how life was. And I actually, at one point, it wasn't the work that was at the Folklife Festival, but our last piece, I ended up collaborating with somebody because we were sitting there vocalizing our frustrations about our families and about our like work life and our school life and how it just wasn't jiving and how we weren't able to. And that actually was the inspiration for my final piece in her class. And it was that collaborative, I'm frustrated and feeling alone. And then we both ended up working together because we both had those feelings. And so, yeah, it definitely creates a sense of community.
Talk about the work that you did have in at the Northwest.
This actually wasn't from the
Oh, that, oh, that wasn't. No, okay, no. I'm looking at she has some beautiful pictures in here, and I'm like looking at them, peeking over.
Yeah, no. I actually brought the pieces from the frustration of feeling alone and separated and not being able to see my family and work and all of these things. And because we ended up talking about that in the interview before that. So I actually brought those.
Let's talk about that a little bit. What was the reaction to that artwork?
Actually, it was really, really interesting to me because it felt like people were avoiding the artwork. They were placemats and they were set on a table so that people could see them as they were sitting down to eat, study, whatever during the lunch hour. And there was blatant avoidance where people would sit down, glance at the artwork, and push it aside. Yeah. And it was almost as though people didn't want to be assaulted with this artwork, or they were uncomfortable with the artwork. And I associate that with basically that people are disenfranchised from the world around them and that they don't have that sense of community. And I think that if more people had that sense of community and were able to tap into that resource, that they would be able to be less afraid of things like this, or less afraid of things that express emotion or express feeling. And they wouldn't just be looking for these aesthetically pleasing things that are simple and don't hurt them in any way. And so I feel like the world needs more of that. Right. Sense of community.
I mean, you mentioning that, just, you know, kind of going back to that whole, the beauty, the aesthetic thing, right? I mean, but isn't that so what you see all the time? I mean, you know, when I think about media, I think about the images that people see, and it's kind of a thing that people don't want the ugly truth, right? They want the beautiful truth. They want the happy, right? I mean, Rachel, I want you to chime in here as well. Like, what's your own experience with Art for Social Change? And you also had some work at the Northwest Folklife Festival as well, right?
I did. And my particular pieces for the Folklife Festival, dealt a lot with, one of them dealt a lot with my anxiety about being so overwhelmed by things in the media, and just being a person who's constantly on the internet, probably too much, and feeling bombarded by the, you know, quote unquote ugly stories, and how do we process all of that as an individual without imploding, basically. And so one of my pieces is about that. And at the end of the day, really all we have is hope and being able to meditate and kind of be able to blow those things away. But also that's just as an individual. So we need, you know, community to be able to come together and help fight some of those issues. The other piece is about my former career. I've been a makeup artist for about 14 years now. So I've dealt in art in a different way to sell things, basically. And being in Beverly's class has really helped to help me to hone my skills in a way to use art in a different way, not to sell things, but to use it as a tool to reach out to other women, friends, being able to talk about those difficult issues that people don't really like to talk about. But if you use art, it's a way of communicating that's not as, offensive is the only word.
Well, I wanted to pick up on something. So, you know, you used to be a makeup artist. So how did you know, being in Beverly's class and kind of, you know, taking on this Art for Social Change, how did that, or did it, you know, change any of your perceptions, I guess, maybe about the work that you were doing as a makeup artist?
Not necessarily as the work I was doing as a makeup artist, but it helped me to kind of crack open that side of myself that I was afraid to before, because I was a trainer as a makeup artist as well. So I taught everybody in the company I worked for. So there's definitely, this is how you do it. You can't really go outside of this. And there is rules. There are definite rules. And that creates a lot of fear when you're trying to create in a new medium. And so working with Beverly, the first time we worked, I was in her class, was, I guess, a little bit over a year ago, and I was terrified. Even though I'd been working with my hands, doing art for, you know, over a decade, I was terrified to try something new. And she really helped me to honor that part of me and just say, it doesn't matter. You just have to let it go and you have to work through it. And really helped me to understand that everybody can be able to everybody can use art for good. And everybody can connect in some way through art as long as they're able to, like, let go of some of their inhibitions. And
well, speaking of that connection, you all have mentioned the word community. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's a kind of a big part of it. And I wanted to just kind of go around and Beverly, I'll start with you to talk a little bit about how community can become more engaged in art and social change, making it something that isn't so much of a, you know, as Jen was saying here, I want to turn away from it. I don't want to be associated with it. But, you know, really kind of embracing it. And mm-hmm. I don't know what your thoughts are, but Beverly, I'm going to start with you.
Okay. Well, there are a few things. I think it's really important to mention that the University of Washington in Tacoma is in the process of creating a new major called Arts and Community. And we hope that it'll be online and approved by, it'll be in place by 2014, fall of 2014. And we're going to be training our students to go out and work in communities in a different way. Traditionally, art has been taught in art schools by medium. We teach at UWT by theme. So students come in and they learn eco art. They learn art in a time of war. And it's not an art history class. They're actually making art about those topics, learning media literacy, learning about the art that has been made on that topic, and reading about the topic. It's a very innovative way of teaching. And we're going to take that curriculum and add to it a lot of spicy new things so that students will know how to work in communities so that they're not parachuting in. What does it mean to have a bridge person so that you're respectfully working with community? What does it mean to have communities that feel invisible, help them to become more visible? How to foster cultural democracy in the best way? I don't know that there's a long tradition of that happening here in Seattle because I'm a relatively new arrival. Even though I've been teaching in Tacoma for the past 10 years, I was on Vashon for 8 years. And on Vashon, I was part of an organization that still exists called Vashon Linked in Social Engagement. And those artists who were part of the organization, we were doing projects to try and bring in more community members to feel that their skills and their creativity were honored. And we'll be doing it through topics. So students who have an affinity for working with the homeless will be able to do art projects with that community. Students who have an affinity for working with domestic abuse survivors or with veterans can work with those communities, helping those communities make art about their issues and their concerns. It's not art therapy, though. A lot of people get confused. It's not working on that particular level, but it is a very important strategy for making art that has been going on, particularly in Britain, for many, many decades, because it's been supported by grants there that we don't have as much support for it here, but it's beginning. I'm learning from people that I'm meeting in Seattle that we're on the hub of having more and more funding for this kind of work. So our students will be graduating into that environment. So that's good.
Jen, what would you add to that in terms of the community aspect and bringing people in?
I think it's all about accessibility, basically. If a lot of people have this misconception that art has to be done with some sort of a medium, and you can do art with your body, you can sing, you can make sounds, you can dance, you can move. And I think that making sure that other people understand that it's not this elite thing that you only partake in as a hobby, that you can do it every day and every motion and every word that you say if you really want to, and just making it user-friendly and accessible would make a stronger community for art. I also think that art would make that same community stronger, conversely. So I really feel like that's the key. And also, you know, you guys were talking about the museums and stuff earlier. The museums are part of this divisional thing that happens where it makes people feel like art is inaccessible because you have to pay to go see this art. Whereas if you bring it out into the community and you bring it on the streets and you bring it into the coffee shops and you put it on a sidewalk, you don't have to pay to see that. that, and you're engaging other people in that way, and other people see that and they're like, hey, maybe I can do that. So I feel like that's kind of a key component.
That's really I like that. I mean, I'm like, I was really intently listening to you and my brain was just spinning. I was thinking about, you know, like art walks. I mean, is that kind of an example, I think, of, you know, bringing it out of the, you know, like kind of, like you said, out of that museum space that feels like I have to pay, it's a little more elite, but it brings it into these community spaces and people are able to walk around and they get to see art and they get to participate. Because I know, I would say art walks for me, I had never attended one until I lived here, and I lived in West Seattle at the time. And that was a new experience, but it was awesome because I did feel exactly what you're saying. Like, you, that's great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jen, for that. Rachel, I have to have you add in as well. We're running out of time, but I definitely want to get your response too in terms of community, how you bring people in.
Definitely. I feel that art, community art, is really about storytelling. And I think right now people really want to tell their stories. And it's a way to tell it visually, or like Jen was saying, audibly, dance, however you want to do it. But having art in a space in public where people can just walk up to it, not only is it accessible, but it gives people a safe space to feel like they can talk about their story. Where you don't have to maybe post it on Facebook, or you don't have to get permission at a museum or in some other place where, you know, you're getting paid for it. But it's just something that you can come together and say, we're going to make art. This is what it's going to be about. You guys all have the same intent. And really, the intention behind it is what kind of makes it magical. When everybody comes together and has the same idea and focus and create something together, like, you can't buy that. So...
Beverly, I saw you shaking your head. I felt like you might have one more thing to add. So.
Well, what she's saying, what both of Jen and Rachel have so well said, is that we're in this moment where people are starving for this. And it needs to happen not just on art walks, but it needs to be part of our everyday life. So people need to be making art in their neighborhoods and inviting their neighbors and to do things with each other and share stories. We need that right now. People are going to the internet to find community, and that's fine, but you need embodied community, and art really makes it vital. So if people are interested in reading more about this, they can read my book, Arts for Change, Teaching Outside the Frame. Okay. It has the stories of 33 artists who teach art for social change around the world. And it's written in a very accessible way. It's kind of a combination of memoir, fable, and history and theory. And it's not just for educators. It's for anybody who's interested in how art can transform lives.
And we do have the information up on our website at kbcs.fm. So folks can also go to kbcs.fm, and we'll have this interview up there as well as information about your book. And I know we don't want the internet to, you know, replace our, you know, community. However, are there websites or anything that any websites that you, Jen or Rachel, that you have that you'd like to share? I was like, to make sure I ask.
No.
Okay, no.
I don't have a website.
Okay. Well, should you get one up, let us know, and we'll be happy to send people that way. But thank you all so much, Jen, Beverly, Rachel, for coming into the studio and talking about art for social change. We'll keep in touch with you, Beverly, and hopefully in 2014, we'll be talking about the installation of this new program at the University of Washington, Tacoma.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much.